You're listening to Bit by Bit, April 24th, 2009. Welcome, this is Bob Sprankle with Bit by Bit, a podcast by teachers for teachers, talking about the changing landscape in the 21st century classroom. And have you ever had that experience where you have an amazing conversation with someone and you get to the end of the conversation, you say, "Ah, we should have podcast this." Well, that happens to me a lot. I know Cheryl Oaks and I say that all the time. So this time I had the foresight to start the podcast during a conversation. I got email from Tom Blount from Northwest Arkansas Education Service Cooperative, and he wanted to ask a few questions about podcasting, and in particular, he was talking about an old show that I did called The Bobby Bucket Show, which was all about literacy, and he's a, Tom is an ADE literacy specialist, so he wanted to talk to me about that, and I asked him if we could record it, and he was okay for that, and his colleague, Jacob Hayward, a science specialist, stopped by as well, so we've got a great conversation going on here, and I had the foresight to hit record. And I'm going to put this up as a podcast. Hopefully, it'll help other people out there that have similar questions or thoughts. And also, Tom and Jacob are asking for more resources. So please, in the comments, add on other pastures that they can go explore in. I'll put links in the show notes to everything mentioned, even to the Bobby Bucket Show. Just a little background on that. That was a show I did in my early days of podcasting. When I had my students podcasting, I realized I had to also become a podcaster to know exactly what the process was like. And so I started that show, which I hope to return to someday. Seven shows. Pretty much for the elementary age students about literacy. And you'll also notice in the recording, we start off with really great audio, and then because Tom brings in Jacob as well, the audio gets very fuzzy. But I think it's I think if you're listening to headphones, I don't think it'll be too bad. In a car, you might have a little bit of trouble, but I hope the audio is not too distracting for you. And as always, I try to get two birds with one stone, and so it's great to record this. Have had a great conversation with Tom and Jacob, and then we get to share it with you. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. And I'd just like to thank Tom and Jacob for such a great conversation, and we're happy to share it with you. Thanks for listening. Hi, Tom.
We're connecting here.
How you doing?
Fine.
Good. Is this your first Skype call?
Yes, it is.
Congratulations. It's exciting, huh?
Well, I didn't think it was probably even as technical as some of these webinars that we've set up. You know, for our literacy unit in our state, we have to, you know, go into a room and get everybody connected, and then you know, all their technical stuff has to work. And so I thought, well, Skype might not be quite as bad, but I don't know. I'm learning as we're going.
Yeah, no, it's good. Hey, do you mind if I record just in case some of this conversation works well as a podcast?
That's fine with me.
Okay, I always like to kill two birds with one stone. So sure. If it can help somebody else, then it's great to post it. So you are from what district again?
I work for an education co-op. It's a regional co-op, and it's Northwest Arkansas. Now, that's not orienting real well. Our claim to fame near here is the headquarters for Walmart.
Okay.
Bentonville, Arkansas.
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, I'm flattered and honored that you found Bobby Bucket after all these years. So that gives me hope to keep it alive.
Well, I figured your changes probably sidetracked you, and it was hard to keep it going. So.
It was. It took a lot of time. What'd I do? Like 7 episodes, and it took an entire summer to get those done. And I loved it. I'd love to return to it. But yeah, with everything else, that had to go.
Well, I presume the daughter you're talking about picking up is Little Bucket, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. She's 10 now, so that yeah. was a while ago, yeah.
I enjoyed that. I could, that interplay between you and her, and you know, and the lost and found, and I could tell, you know, you were working on that figurative language, and it's you kind of were sliding in so many things that at one time was interesting.
Yeah, she really made the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's got to start her own, so. But you had some really good questions about, you know, especially for visual learners, how to break that up. So what are you thinking about with podcasting?
Well, the purpose that I have as a literacy specialist is to train other teachers. So I'm hoping to, well, let me back up. I was inspired by your professor character and the way he was presenting the skimming scanning strategy. It, you know, just kind of lit the bulb in my head, say, well, if we could put together just a series of podcasts working around the strategy notion, then maybe we could have those posted, you know, a teacher could have those posted so that if a student needed to access more information, they would just be directed to that podcast and they would be able to, you know, just work that information and then get back to what they were doing and, you know, have a better orientation learning. And, you know, that's where I'm looking to use it.
Yeah. So like short segments would work best for that. Does it yes. have to, and you were asking in your email, if I remember, if you had those separate files, can they all be part of one podcast? Right. Is that what you were?
Well, yeah. Like the one that you had, excuse me, if I pull off I don't know how good my mic is. I have a colleague, this one of the science specialists, Jacob Hayward, that just walked in, and I had told him that I was going to be talking to you, and he was interested in, I showed him your work before, and so he's interested in what you're doing, but he's just wanted to introduce himself and kind of be part of the conversation too.
Great.
Okay. So I hope I'm going to pull this off, see if this works. Is this working?
Yeah, definitely, yeah,
definitely
got louder.
Got louder.
Okay.
And I hear the echo. Oh, that's better.
Oh, that's better.
Is that all right?
Except for my echo.
For my echo.
It sounds fine.
Okay. Okay. You're sounding good here. Yeah. Here's Jacob.
Mr. Sprankle, how are you doing today?
Good. How you doing? Nice to meet you, Jacob.
Nice to meet you. I really enjoyed the podcast. I think that... you have a lot of good information that comes out, and it's almost like listening to NPR.
Oh, great.
enjoy those little tidbits of things that are coming out, particularly at the last few minutes where the new and exciting things that are being produced that most people don't even hear about till weeks or months down the road. So yeah. It just takes time to filter down that information.
Yeah. So you're referring to the Geek of the Weeks?
Geek of the Week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
We love doing that. We actually, all three of us presented a conference in Maine, and we for the past 3 years, we've actually had Geek of the Week lunches, and they're a big hit. People love bringing in stuff. It's a great way to share that information.
Mm-hmm.
So, excellent.
Because that's part of what our job is to share the information. One of the things that we're trying to do is get this technology in the teacher's hands, one.
Yeah.
And two, convince the administration and sometimes necessarily the school board that this is okay to do. I'm doing a lot of research now on NetGens, how they learn. A researcher named Clark has developed a term called digital dissonance, where kids just kind of shut down. They don't know how to react in a world that's run in the old school days.
Right.
And helping them know that we're working on this for the students and the teachers, I think will hopefully accelerate the student learning and the student achievement gap that we need to close very quickly.
That's great. So, Tom, you were talking about different short files. Oh, is that what
yes,
you're...
Yes, sir. Yeah. You know, just, and I think you understood what I was saying, that the trying to take, for example, your one show on Lost and Found, you had a whole series of segments there. For example, you know, just your text-to-text connection and all that connection you did with your daughter. And then you got into the professor doing his strategy stuff, and that's the part that I was picking up on. And you also had that parent piece, and then I can't remember if I'm missing anything, but rather than having it quite so long as a full-length show like that or podcast, you know, just having those 10-minute segments, and if I just confined it, like I said, to those learning strategies. And, you know, with Jacob here being science, looking at eventually getting this in the hands of those science teachers to say, you know, here's your literacy in science. This is a strategy that'll help you read the text, that type of thing too.
Yeah. So a couple ideas I have for you that would help break it up is, one, yeah, they could be separate files, you know, and just totally separate from each other, you know, rather than a theme show like the Bobby Bucket thing happened. But are you guys Macs or PCs?
Both.
Okay.
Right.
So
maybe PC.
But in the future, we're going to be getting a classroom in our building that's going to be not 90% Macs.
Okay. Well, there's a type of podcast that you can do with Macs, and it's called Enhanced Podcasts. And I don't know if there's a Windows, you know, equal solution to this, but basically in an Enhanced Podcast, you can put in graphics at different points and make chapters with those graphics. So a student could just drill down to chapter 3, let's say, and not have to listen to everything beforehand. If you're thinking video, or even this would work with graphics too, then maybe getting it out of the podcast and putting it into a Flash player. And my favorite one is an open source project called JWFLV Media Player. And I'll give you that link right now. I'll put that in the chat here with you.
Okay.
So that's how I've done a lot of those, just so that people can just go to the part that they want. In fact, if you go to... if you go to my school site, and I'll bring that up, and you see the tech time with Mr. S, that's done in that type of player.
Oh, okay.
So I'll bring that up for a second. You'll see all our lessons broken down, and then at the top is tech time, and yes. You'll just see a bunch of different rounds, and that's what I'm doing there. And then they all share the same picture, but those could be different pictures with, you know, the strategy on it or something like that.
So I could have graphics.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's just one flavor of what the JW Media Player offers. They've got, usually you just put in all your information and, you know, you have to have a place to serve it. But it'll build itself right on their site. They have this JW Wizard, I think it's called. And I usually make it and then forget how to make it. and then need to make a new one and mess it up and have to learn from scratch. So I'm not the best teacher on it, but it is a great media player.
All right. Taking that idea, and you're willing to start over and relearn and that type of thing. If I'm working with teachers who have very little connection with trying any of these, that's where we came up with this idea that Microsoft PhotoStory 3, does that give you enough to work with? It's pretty simple. you know, to do anything with that, or should I just try to move them to this player and use something like that?
Personally, I've never worked with that, but I hear people raving about it. In fact, since Tom's email, I've heard like three more people talk about how this is, you know, how they're working. Mm-hmm. Moving it to a Flash format, if it's video, is a great idea because you're going to really reduce your bandwidth. Or another idea is just do these and put them up on TeacherTube or YouTube and don't even worry about bandwidth or serving, and they'll be turned into, you know, Flash video at that point anyway.
I think for the first attempts, we're probably going to stay away from the video because I think that scares people off a little bit.
Yeah.
And intimidates them. So, but I need to work into that because I think you're right that that will, just like it says, enhance the podcast and give it more, especially, I would think, Jacob, for science. You know, it's the graphics are only so limited if you've got, you know, that just these two-dimensional, so you need to have those videos, I think.
Well, the digital storytelling format works to a degree, but if we could actually have something that would allow them to see interaction with something in science, an environmental issue. You know, I can bring up pictures through a digital storytelling format, and they can say, oh, look at these different things that are, you know, causing air pollution or whatever the case may be, but actually having them make a video of going to and talking to businesses about what they're doing to curb their air pollution. And I think we have a real transition to make with that, and I think that's an excellent resource that we can use. And I agree with Tom that we may intimidate teachers because that's kind of going from a crawl to a run stage. And kind of digital storytelling is kind of that middle ground where, oh, I can feel comfortable finding images and uploading them and making it go into this one RD pre-growth program thing, and it does it for me. And then just showing them the transition from going from picture to video is no different. And so that's kind of where we kind of see the stepping stones, if you will, on developing our teachers.
And what age group of students are we talking about?
Well, I work with K-12, and so does Tom, but we're trying...
Upper elementary, middle school is probably the most receptive right now.
Yeah. In fact, I'm working with a school right now that we're getting ready to redesign on a school-wide basis, integrating technology into their lessons and actually having the person who's in the computer lab show them how to build up from kindergarten to fourth grade, because it's a K-4 school, on a kind of a pyramid of what they do in kindergarten all the way through fourth grade, what they should be able to do, have as skills by the time they leave that grade level.
Right.
So that's, you know, we're starting to see, even with the younger ages, a little bit more receptivity to the idea that, okay, our kids are already, they're growing up with it. They're the natives and we're not. We just have to accept that reality.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing I would say is just turn it right over to the kids anyway. you know, the teachers, you know, they'll have a part, but once the kids get a hold of it, you know, then the success really kicks in. I mean, even when I was doing my Room 208 podcast, I did all the editing initially because it's just so time-consuming. But then I had kids come back from fifth grade and start doing that for me, and even my third and fourth grade students were begging to do it at recess time. So that really, you know, made it a lot easier. And then, have you seen those flip cameras, the flip video cameras?
Yeah, we got them here.
Yeah, they're great.
Those are fantastic. And the fact that they've gotten, within 2 years, they've already upgraded to an even better format.
Yeah, high definition. I got to get one of those. And for me, you know, the downside of all of this is editing. I try not to edit. So when I give the kids flip videos, because they can, you know, do retake after retake, I just tell them it's got to all be in-camera editing. If you're unhappy with that take, throw it away, do it again. And then that really cuts down on time, too. So, you know, as far as the teachers accepting it more, I think more the work on the kids that want to do it anyway helps out. And a video, definitely, yeah, it's good to start with audio and work your way up to video. And I just shy away from video all the time because it's so... time intensive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does take a lot of time.
Yeah.
Have you had a lot of conversations with here lately about trying to not have the misconception that technology is a silver bullet, and allowing and still emphasizing making teachers better at being teachers? Is that a conversation?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, Cheryl and Alice and I from Seedlings, I mean, I think, you know, it's our mantra that it's not about the technology. And we've been saying that since, you know, the late 90s. You know, we just don't see that technology is what's making this transformation. You know, that anything could do these same kind of things and engage kids. It just happens that this is, you know, such a great tool for so many reasons. One, it's going to get our kids ready for these unknown jobs in the 21st century. Two, it's, you know, just how we've evolved at this time to communicate. These are the tools we're using. I mean, right now we're on Skype, you know.
Right.
5 years ago, I wouldn't have even thought of that as, you know, a possibility. So, but yeah, I think a lot of people see, like, let's just put money into the technology and hope that that's going to raise test scores or whatever. And that's just not it. And even, I don't know if you've heard, like in Maine, you know, we had the first one-to-one laptop program.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even the beginning of that was so successful because it clearly stated to the teachers, this isn't about the technology, it's about differentiating instruction.
Right.
Have you read the book Disrupting Class?
I've read excerpts from it, but the concept behind it is wonderful.
Yeah, I love that book.
Yeah.
And to me, I think that's, you know, a lot of how I see that, you know, they're looking at technology as, well, here's the way that this is going to, you know, change things drastically just from a business standpoint or an economics view. So I think it's going to have that impact with her. People want to face that reality or not, but
I agree with you on that.
Just the whole concept of disruptive innovation, you know, has just from its meaning that they need to embrace it or get out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the writing's on the wall, you know, it's clear, you know, when Oprah Winfrey is now twittering, you know, the tipping point is come and gone.
Yeah, end of the world is coming, I suppose, at that point.
That's right.
On one of your recent Seedling shows, you know, you had some great links to Edutopia videos, you know, of some great examples of where technology really is being used wisely and appropriately and so forth. Well, as I was emailing you earlier, do you have any connections, though, to any school sites that really could give us some better understanding of what's a workable layout for this model classroom we're talking about?
Yeah, you know, when you folks are talking about building a 21st century classroom, I saw that in Tom's note, and I really thought about that. You know, I mean, this is, I think I build it daily in my head and, you know, wonder when it's going to become a reality. But yeah, I mean, there are plenty contacts out there doing, you know, amazing things. And, you know, in either small parts or big parts, they're, you know, helping it progress of where we kind of hope it to be. So I could definitely collect resources for you. And I mean, you know, even just on Twitter, I can direct them to you. You know, I'm thinking of a bunch of people right now. When I think of like the dream classroom, I think I said this recently in a Seedling show, you know, to me, that 21st century classroom is going to look like an Apple store, you know, where kids are working on their own thing and you're in small groups and people can really, you know, just walk around and take charge of their learning with the technology. And, you know, it's kind of a seamless experience. And then, you know, I just love the idea of the genius bar, you know, let certain learners take that role for a while and teach each other. And the teacher's just really a facilitator, kind of like the manager of the store. But yeah, I'll definitely start a list and you know, if we post this on Bit by Bit, people can just answer the call and, you know, just give me all the information that of how you'd like them to get in touch with you.
Okay.
And also, we're talking about the physical space that the students are learning in. The virtual space that the students also live in, I think, is an important aspect, particularly with Second Life, types of SimCity stories that they live in. Those, I think, need to be part of that conversation. And also, I think we need to develop the conversation about the philosophical changes that occur in teaching in the 21st century classrooms and transforming our minds from thinking, getting the kids to graduate and move on to a job, but, you know, that global mentality.
Yes.
And I hope that conversation is really taking root on defining what a 21st century classroom looks like. Most people just consider the physical space, but there's a third dimension and also a philosophical environment that we have to discuss and explore as well.
Right, definitely.
Well, you feel then, you know, if we just follow your seedlings, that we can just keep up with some of that. And like you say, if I give you a contact, then we'll be able to start making some networks.
Sure. I mean, you know, definitely there's so many networks out there. You know, I don't know what you're part of yet, but there's some great things I can point you towards. Definitely Classroom 2.0 is one of the big ones. Have you seen that yet? Any of the Ning groups?
I'm familiar with Ning, but I guess I've seen variations of that. I've got many different resources that talk about Web 2.0.
Yeah.
Resource.
Have you seen the K-12 online conference yet?
No, I have not.
That is, especially for teachers, that's a great place to start for teachers that are really, like, interested, you know, that you're working with. It's going into its fourth year, and all of it's just open, and, you know, all these workshops and keynotes that are free and just have lived on there. And, you know, it's the how-to as well as the pedagogy, and, you know, probably the best resource out there to start with. So I'd highly commend that.
Okay.
Yeah. Who kind of generated that?
That's, you know, just a bunch of people that started it. You know, right now there's Wes Fryer, Cheryl Nussbaum Beach, Darren Kripatwa, Dean Shoresky, others that are kind of, you know, do the legwork, and then they just gather presenters and keynotes for that. So it'll start up again in October, but it's synchronous to a degree where we actually meet online at times in Illuminate, and then it's totally asynchronous where, you know, most of the time I take all year to get through the whole workshop thing.
Right.
But it'll take place kind of in real time in October, and then it's there. And, you know, I've actually taken some of my teachers to it, and I'd say, you know, start back at the beginning. I think it was, 2002 now. Start there. You know, don't jump in the middle. There's some really great stuff there that you don't want to miss. So David Warlick's got a couple keynotes there that are just amazing. And
great.
We've done a couple workshops ourselves there, so.
Okay, very good. Well, yeah, definitely have to explore that and learn a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
So what you're seeing is, you know, just explore these different contacts and, you know, literally pick the best from each and kind of put together what we think is going to work for our people here, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely found that every time I make some connections, I find them at the other circles, you know, it all kind of overlaps. And, you know, Twitter is, you know, one of the ways that I feed myself daily, for sure, because just the people that I follow are constantly putting up great links, great articles, great examples. So
okay.
That really helps me as
well. Okay.
That's interesting.
Well, thanks for the information.
That is good. For those links there, we'll definitely look through those as well. And
now I'm going to have to ask you again, because it's a new experience, what you have posted for these links, when we're done here, will that stay up?
Oh yeah. Yep. It all lives there. Okay. You know, even the K-12, that's just the College of William and Mary have hosted all that stuff indefinitely. Oh. you know, it's all there. Yep. And you know, like even Bobby Bucket, I haven't touched that for, you know, what?
2005. Three,
yeah, right. So, but it's still, you know, it all lives there. So, you know, and that's a project I definitely want to return to at some point anyway. So I pay my domain name every year $10, you know. It's like, I'm not giving that up.
Well, it's really creative. I just enjoyed it.
Thanks.
But I know it's a lot of work to put a script together. And
yeah.
Really. Oh, that was one question I wanted to bounce off you. I almost forgot. When you worked with your teachers in creating podcasts, how much templating, so to speak, do you suggest for them? You know, you could script a lot, but if you just had a template that you followed, is that enough to really have consistent quality?
Yeah. The thing that I say all the time, especially when I give a workshop or something, is, you know, just baby steps, and anything can be the most amazing podcast. I mean, you know, this conversation right now, we're just turning on a microphone, you know. I'm not going to edit this. You know, it just happens. And so, you know, for some people, turning on the microphone at the end of the day and having those, you know, second graders talk about what they've done during the day and slapping that up on podcast people or some easy site that you can, you know, record right into, that's a podcast. That's fantastic. You know, I kind of took it to the limit and did a lot of editing and made sure there was musical chapters, you know, to change. And then what I based ours on in our classroom was, you know, the kids writing, all the writing work that they were doing. So, you know, the recording part was really the small piece of it. You know, mm-hmm. We were still writing like we always did. The recording part took like 30 seconds usually. Mm-hmm. And then I'd go home and I'd polish it and edit it, but I didn't need to do that. I mean, it can be as simple as you want it. You know, we've taken a microphone on field trips and the docent says, yeah, you can record me. And that's the podcast and, you know, great home connection where they can go home and their parents can hear everything they just heard at the field trip. Right. So it can really be whatever you want it to be.
Okay.
You know, when I did the Bobby Bucket show, I mean, I was definitely trying to do an entertaining, you know, show there and, you know, with different chapters and stuff. And, you know, it definitely took a lot of time, you know, but that's just what I was into. I mean, you know, as far as showing that to teachers, like do this, I wouldn't do that. That would scare them away, you know, just say, you know, just keep it simple, you know. You know, what's the purpose? Is the purpose, you know, trying to make that home connection or trying to repeat the lessons for students to, you know, have their own private learning tutorial? You know, whatever that purpose is, let that drive it.
And that's what we're going to be doing, is those private tutorial
podcasts.
Yeah. Right.
Just for now.
I see that you have as on your second link, you have Moodle. As your site there, it says Moodle. I really enjoyed Moodle as a teacher. I thought that was a wonderful platform to kind of build stuff on. How would you encourage the conversation about getting that as a platform for all the teachers to use? I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's perfect for what I'm doing. You know, I love Moodle, but I could see that it, you know, one size doesn't fit all. And in our district, we're all required to have a Moodle presence. And you can see, like, at the high school level, it's a perfect tool because, you know, you can put your entire curriculum up there and all your handouts and all, you know, everything up there. But for maybe a kindergarten class, that may not, you know, I mean, I could see it working, but I could see, you know, other teachers thinking that's a little too much. I want a blog. I want that interaction instead of just posting things. So some of our teachers actually, you know, they have the Moodle presence and they have it bounce off to the blog. To me, you know, the blog is the most, you know, perfect tool because it's that two-way conversation. But, you know, I use the Moodle. I have five different age groups that I teach to, and I just turn on my lessons, and I can turn them off and, you know, have all the handouts and all. It's a great tool. And it's open source and, you know, free and, you know, just fantastic. But
when you say you do a blog, or are you setting up your Moodle with the blog in discussion format, or do you actually have a site that they collect a link to off of that?
All my lessons are in the Moodle, and I don't have any forum there. Okay. Then I have two blogs off my school site, which is Link of the Week and Featured Work, and that's where I open up comments to happen. So students can come along and comment on each other's work. It's not happening as much as I'd like them to. I have to actually make more time in the lab for them to do that. So.
Right. And realistically, how much of an expectation do you have with your kids to do some of this work outside the classroom?
I have to really, you know, do a lot of cheerleading and bring it out and show them all. I built it up so that it's a fun, exciting place. And this year I've had the highest turnout. You know, looking at the stats, people are really going home and using the site. But it is interesting that I have to kind of hook them into it. So there's a lessons there, and I want parents to be able to see that and all our outcomes. But I also have the Link of the Week, you know, every Sunday night, a new fun/educational site is posted, and that keeps them coming. And then I even built a virtual playground this year for them to go and do more very light games and stuff like that. But if I don't bring it out in the lab and show stuff off, I watch the stats just fall off. They kind of forget about it. And I even just put this Tring Me, which is sort of like they can leave me a voice message on the virtual playground. I just threw it up, and I haven't told anybody about it. And I know that if they saw that, they'd be leaving me messages because they find that very funny to leave me silly messages. And I haven't gotten any yet, so nobody's going. But the minute I show that, it'll take off again, you know. And, you know, it's interesting. And I think it's just an evolving thing, you know, definitely. And now I have kids coming in and saying, you know, my homepage is the school site. But I, you know, even now I'll have kids in the last trimester say, what's our website again? <You know>? My heart crumbles, you know, and, you know, I put a lot of work into it. And, you know, just, I realize it's an evolving thing that I just have to keep it alive and fresh. And if I don't, then there's no reason they'll end up coming to it. So even like the tech time, I'll do that every week. That's our lesson. Not a lot of people listen to it, you know, but I'm still going to do it because, you know, I just feel like that's what we should do, you know, as teachers, is here's my agenda. I want you to be able to play this for your parents at home. And even if only two parents are listening to it, it's worth it to me. You know, it's just good transparency. And I think it'll, you know, parents will expect that more and more. And, you know, definitely when I started in 2005, talking to parents then about, well, here's our blog, you know, what's a blog, you know. Right. Now we're talking to, you know, the generation, you know, the incoming kindergarten class. Cheryl Oak said this to our administrator the other day, you know, you're going to want to communicate to those parents through Facebook. They all have Facebook accounts. We need a Facebook account for our school. So I think it's much more, you know, acceptable and you know, people are used to using it than 5 years ago, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's, I agree with that assessment from what he was talking about. I just found Moodle to be very productive. And I worked on secondary, so maybe 612 is a good platform to be used by teachers, because it just allowed you to set up everything well in advance. Kids can access it if they're not there. I just see so many positives to it, where you don't always have to be responsible for catching that student, making sure he or she gets that daily information, because they were gone that day for whatever reason. It's all right there. And really taking the load off of the preparation from the teacher so they actually have time to teach the material that they want to do.
Yeah.
And so it's just a – I have not found an equal to Moodle in that sense. I mean, are there other platforms that you've come across or been exposed to that you might suggest as an alternative to that?
There's companies like HotChalk and Blackboard that do that. I haven't really used those much. I've used Blackboard in my own graduate courses. But, I mean, Moodle's, you're right, Moodle's it. And it's just like opening up your plan book to everybody. And, and you're sharing the wealth and the work with the students and the parents, and it just pays off. Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. There's Drupal. I haven't really done a lot with Drupal. It's kind of similar to Moodle, different things that you can install, but that's another one you might want to check out.
Drupal.
Yeah, I think it's based on Moodle. I don't know too much about it, but
I know Google Pages is starting to emerge as another.
Yeah.
Well, it's not necessarily a blogger type site. It's kind of moved a little bit away from that, but that's another potential place that we've been. In fact, one of my professors is doing that. He's pretty much put everything online and uploaded videos of him. And also select things we need to watch, but the Google Pages he's had to move to a little bit to help accommodate more of this platform format that he's looking for. And I'm not sure if they can use Moodle or not, but because Blackboard, as you've probably experienced, just is not compatible with many different things. It's very limiting on what it can do. Money being a limitation factor in many camps.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, my Moodle, I couldn't live without it. Well, now that I, know about it, it's the easiest way to, there's some things I'd like to speed up with it, but it's the way to plan,
And we were talking about the podcasts and the editing and uploading and all that, and Moodle allows you to do videos, pictures, links, every type of format that you need in a very simplistic way.
Yes.
Again, it does take a little time to edit a podcast audio version, but uploading it and having it available for all students at all times is just incredible on what it can do. And particularly, I found most impact with ESL and SPED students, grade level reading. And so they could read along, hear it, see the words, and then they could stop it, go back if they needed to, and move at their own place. So that differentiation of learning that we discussed earlier truly comes to the front with the Moodle platform.
Yeah.
I'm a big supporter.
I'm going to learn about it.
That's what the district I just came from, it uses it. It actually designed it, got its own server to support Moodle. So I'm going to be going back next week to work with some teachers on how to enhance their Moodle experience. So
great.
It's something that's fantastic. So I was just pleased to see that you had it. Still learning.
Well, thank you for your time.
Well, thank you. Great conversation. And, definitely stay in touch. I want to hear more about this 21st century classroom work that you're doing. And, I'd love to be part of it.
Some video.
What's that?
Say
that
again. Flip camera out and give you some video.
Yeah, that'd be great. Excellent.
One of the things I'd be curious is, do you all ever, I have not heard in any of the podcasts I've listened to, and granted I've only listened to a couple of them, but you all ever leave kind of deep thought kind of questions at the end? How would you want to engage this in your conversation in your building? Or do you assume that questions like that are going to be raised internally with the group that's listening to it?
That's a great point. Really, I think we assume it, and we've started giving a little bit more care and attention to the Ning that we have. The Ning actually started as a support to the workshop that we were doing for the K-12 online conference, but it's since become its own thing. I mean, that was a couple years ago, and so now we're putting up like a place for pre questions and post conversation to the podcast, but that would be a good idea to just leave some hanging questions and encourage people to go into the Ning to follow up the conversation, because that's slowly taking off, but not really, not there yet. So,
yeah, I got that idea from Executive Briefing CDs. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them or not.
No.
It's an organization that, if you subscribe to them, they give you kind of the current events, and they list out authors in the most recent research. So,
nice.
The Disrupt class was there. They've also had the Tony Wagner was one of the speakers as well. So they, Doug Reeves has been on, and so they've had. And those are, they designed them around those speakers talking about their books and their findings and how it can impact the classroom and teaching as well. And so, but they ask questions throughout that entire process that they as a conversation starter,
nice.
Which is really good. And so, for example, it's called the Audio Journals Executive Briefing. And for example, you asked about Disrupting Class by Dr. Clay Christensen. Well, he was February of 2009. And if you're interested in just exploring them a little bit more, they're at www.audioed.com. And I think I'll have Tom send you a response. I send this to you on your little chat session, so that way you can have it in front of you as well.
That'd be great. Yeah, if you all could send those links and you know, any of your website information too, that'd be great, because I mean, it's looking like this would be a helpful podcast to put up on Bit by Bit for other people too, if you guys are good with that.
Yeah.
Like I was saying to Tom, I always like to get two birds with one stone. So if it helps somebody else out, you know, we'll put that up. But that would be great.
This has been very insightful and very informative. So we appreciate it very much.
So do I. Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
Okay. Enjoy your day.
Yep.
Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.